With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is the FCB Podcast Network. This is a Fresh Perspective with Jeff Charles.
Yo, 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 welcome back to another episode of A Fresh Perspective with Jeff Charles, and Happy New Year, everybody. Very happy to be with you, and I hope that 2023 is even better than 2022. So in this episode, I'm doing something a little bit different. Some of you are familiar with the Twitter Spaces platform. It's been around for a few years now, and a lot of people are using it to great effect. I actually use it quite a bit, especially lately. Been using it every day with my partner in Liberty, Donnie Anthony. We hold Twitter Spaces where people can basically come on and talk about the issues of the day, whatever topic they want. But for ours, we focus on Liberty and the Liberty movement. But I've also done other spaces even before that. And this one that you're going to listen to today is with my good friend, my comrade, my brother from another mother, one of the few people who I will actually pick up the phone for when he calls. Because if y'all know me, y'all know I don't like being on the phone. But I will talk to this dude on the phone. He also happens to be the CEO of the FCB Network, which is what this podcast is on. So we had a very good conversation about local politics, but specifically when it comes to Black communities, right? That's been a huge topic of discussion in the Republican Party and among the conservative movement. How do we reach Black voters? Now, some of you already know where I land on that now, but that's a different topic for a different day. But the fact of the matter is that there are still a lot of good Republicans who want to make a difference, and Darvio served on the campaign of one of these individuals, and you're going to hear him talk about the campaign. But also some of the difficulties inherent in making inroads at the local level in Black communities. The Democratic Party has become so firmly entrenched, which has been very clever on their part, but so entrenched in the culture and the community and in the local governance that I think a lot of Republicans, or really anybody who wants to challenge the Democrats in these areas, aren't aware of. They don't understand how deep it goes. They don't understand how they have been able to grow their power and hold on to their power for so long. So in this conversation, it's going to give you a little bit more insight of the different factors that go into the stuff that people don't really think about, and the some of the obstacles that Republicans who actually do want to reach these communities are going to face. It was very educational. Darvio goes through his experience, of some of the things that he learned, and things that the GOP would be wise to learn. So check it out. Let us know what you think, and I'll see you on the flip side.
All right, Darvio, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
All right. What's good with you?
What's going on, brother?
Not much. Chilling. All right. So maybe we should just go ahead and get started, because I only have about an hour or so, because I'm going to be on a Tesla and Figaro Spaces right after this. So,
right.
Yeah. So we wanted to hold this space, and I have a feeling we'll probably need to do another one too, because, you know, just based on a little bit that you and I have talked about, based on what you've seen in Ohio there, working on a campaign in a Black community, there was a lot to it. And there's a lot of stuff that might blow some people's minds, because what you told me is stuff that people don't really think about too often, mainly because they don't know. We always talk about Republicans doing Black outreach and trying to make inroads in Black communities. And I think a lot of us have an idea of some of the obstacles that Republicans will face, specifically at the local level. But it's actually even more complex than we think it is. You know, obviously there's the obstacle of having not really made much of an effort to knock on doors and to speak with Black Americans face to face. I mean, we all know that the Republican Party has been very bad at that over the past 6-7 decades or so. But this absence has allowed Democrats to really build deep and entrenched roots and strongholds in these communities in ways that we don't even think about. So we wanted to have this conversation so that Darvio can educate us on what he saw. Because if I remember correctly, there's some stuff that even you were surprised by.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you're on the ground there. So I wanted to just kind of start out, Darvio, with can you just kind of give us a kind of an overview of some of the things that you noticed? And first, introduce yourself, let people know who you are and what you've been doing this election season, and then kind of give us an idea of what you were saying.
So first of all, for those of you who don't know me, I'm Darvio Morrow. I'm the CEO of FCB Networks. We produce a lot of media and entertainment content, including my brother Jeff Charles's show, A Fresh Perspective, which you can get on all podcast platforms, by the way. And so this election cycle, I was helping on a campaign for a county executive here in Cuyahoga County. So I'm in Ohio. Cuyahoga County is the blue stronghold that's still left in the state of Ohio as the rest of the state has gone red. And the position of county executive, for those who are not familiar, most of you probably have like county commissioners and things like that. We don't have commissioners anymore because we had a big scandal in 2009, and our commissioner, our auditor, a judge, and several other people are currently sitting in prison. So
wow.
It was so bad that the voters said, screw this whole thing, throw the entire system out and replace the commissioners with a county executive, which kind of functions like a mayor and the county council. So even with that, Republicans have never had that position in this county. And Republicans have not been in county leadership going back to the commissioner days in 25 years. Wow. So it's been a long time. So we knew we were kind of facing headwinds. The guy who was running for office, who was running for county executive, his name was Lee Weingart. And he was, ironically, the last Republican commissioner as well. So we knew that it would be historic if we were able to be successful, and we knew the kind of headwinds that we were facing. But the thing that I saw the most, and this is what we were talking about, Jeff, the things that I would call and tell you, like, yo, this is crazy. Mm-hmm. We knew that there's a machine, but I think a lot of people didn't know how big the machine is or how the machine functions, especially if you're a Black Republican, because if you're in the community, you typically don't get access to those rooms. Mm-hmm. But because of some of the relationships that we have here, because up until very recently, you know, our Democrats in Cleveland and Cuyahoga County was, you know, they were pretty moderate, you know, normal traditional Democrats. You know, the progressive brigade has taken over, you know, within the last year or two. But prior to that, you know, there was a lot of normal Democrats that we were able to have sincere relationships with. So when you get to see the machine up front, And up close, it's the wildest thing that I've ever seen. And Republicans typically have no idea, even when you do go into the community, because you're right, Jeff, Republicans don't do it enough. That's part of what has led to the problem, because you've been gone for so long that that power has become entrenched and taken a foothold. But also, a lot of times Republicans don't know how the machine operates. They don't know how the machine works. They've never seen it before. So a lot of times Republicans are going to these communities asking people to vote, you know, vote your values and vote for me because you believe in such and such so-and-so. And these people are like, I could lose my job if I vote for you. I could lose my house if I vote for you. I could lose everything I have if I vote for you. That is, we were literally told that on the campaign trail by several people who are like, I like you. I support you. I know the Democrat ain't ish, because the Democrat candidate that they put up was somebody who was in charge of a police department that targeted black drivers, was somebody who, when he got in the race, there was a black man in the race who probably would have won had he stayed in, but somebody, quote unquote, leaked his tax problems, and the Democrat who ended up winning the race, this idiot sent him a text message that basically was like an extortion letter. So we know that this guy, we know the history that this guy has. Mm-hmm. And people were still afraid to vote against him because of how much they were dependent upon the party, the Democratic Party.
Now, can you talk to us about his opponent, Chris Ronayne? I mean, because, you know, what he did while in office and what he allowed to happen would easily get candidates disqualified in other types of races, especially on the Democratic side. So I want you to kind of talk to us about the issue, especially when it concerns racism that he presided over, just to give people an idea of how vulnerable this guy should have been.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he was president of a neighborhood called University Circle, and he was president of a community development corporation here in Cleveland. The community development corporations basically run everything. Right. I don't know if that's the case in other cities, but the community development corporation here and most neighborhoods have them. And the ones who get a lot of money have really good ones. Have really strong ones that are entrenched and connected. And this neighborhood is a rich, you know, wealthy, it's one of the it's an enclave, right? Mm-hmm. The black population is very small in this community. But they have a police department. Now, mind you, I just said University Circle is a community development corporation. They have their own police department, mm-hmm. a private police department that has ticketing and arrest powers that is not accountable to anybody. They're not accountable to the citizens. They're not even accountable to the politicians. They were only accountable to one person and one person only, and that was the president of University Circle Inc., which was Chris Ronayne. And their police department, it was in 2020, ProPublica did a study that showed that 88% of the tickets that police department gave was to black drivers. Now, I just told you the demographics of this neighborhood. So it's clear that it was targeting. Right. Mm-hmm. And when Chris was made aware of it, he said, oh, this is awful. I will fix this. And about a year later, right before he left, it wasn't at 88% anymore. Now it was at 94%.
It got worse. That was his idea of handling. He was like, oh, 88%. That's not enough.
That ain't enough. Right? So this obviously becomes a campaign issue. And if you could paint the picture of what we would associate as like a stereotypical out of touch white Republican response to that, that's what the Democrat gave. Mm-hmm. Like he went on an on an interview and called it race baiting. Like, race baiting? Like, are you serious? Like, his response is, when he chose to respond, because most of the time he ignored it.
Right.
When he chose to respond, it was awful. Absolutely. He had no answer. The entire campaign, he still had no answer for it. And for most of the campaign, he had no policies for Black people. My candidate did. My candidate had a full, he did everything, basically everything that we tell Republicans to do, Lee did.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll kind of, I don't want to jump ahead of myself. We'll get to the rest of that in a minute, but go ahead.
So can you give us an idea of the type of policies that Lee Weingart was proposing specifically for Black people?
So the first one that really got my attention that made me intrigued with him in the first place was the issue of contracting, which is something that's a problem in pretty much every major city in America that has a lot of Black people in it. So in Cuyahoga County, they have these, what's supposed to be these set-asides, that 10% of your contracting is supposed to go to a Black-owned business, to a minority business.
Okay.
Well, in Cuyahoga County, they have what's called a good faith exemption. So in other words, if you're a white business, you can just certify on the honor system and say, we tried, we couldn't find any. We looked for Black businesses and we couldn't find any. And you can get an exception and still get the contract. So as a result, even though the law is on the books that says Black businesses are supposed to get 10%, Black businesses in actuality in Cuyahoga County ended up getting 1%.
Ooh.
So Lee's policy was, the first thing he does on day one is remove the good faith exemption. It becomes a pass-fail equation. Either you have 10% of your bid going to Black businesses, or you don't. And if you don't, you don't get the contract.
Period. Okay.
That was the first thing that caught my attention. And then he wanted to increase it. He wanted to increase it. You know, eventually getting up to 20%, and eventually, you know, slowly getting up to 30%, because that's the percentage of the county that's Black. So that was the first thing that really kind of attracted me to him in the first place. Then he was also talking about taking money. So the county here owns things we shouldn't own, right? We own a private building for the medical industry, which is big here. We also own a Hilton hotel that is being paid for with taxpayer dollars. And as a result, because we own it and we have to service the debt, the county pays $50 million a year on the service of the debt to the Hilton hotel. So one of the things he wanted to do was to sell those two buildings, take the proceeds from that, and create a 10,000 homes plan, which would build 10,000 new homes and target it specifically to people who are either currently renting or in public assistance, to be able to give them a home that they own so that they can build wealth and equity through that home. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's just a couple of the things that we were talking. It was probably the most robust policy for Black people on a local level that I have ever seen in my entire life. And it came from a Republican. So that was what got me on board in the first place.
Okay. So one thing I want to go back to, you mentioned that there were residents who were saying, you know, if I vote for this person, I'll lose everything. But you were telling me about the political operatives, the Black political operatives specifically, who are involved in the community. And can you talk to us a little bit about their motivations? Because if I remember correctly, you're telling me that some of them actually liked what Lee Weingart was proposing, but there were reasons why they still had to remain with the Democrat.
Yes, because the fear for a lot of them was, if I go with you and you lose, I get completely locked out. And then I can get nothing for nobody. So I would rather, instead of trying to help y'all win and get a bigger plate, I would rather take the scraps from this guy, because at least I know I'm going to get that. So So that was one of the issues. Another one of the issues is the dirty things that this guy did. Mm-hmm. You know, I think probably maybe two or three weeks after I had started helping the campaign, there was a guy by the name of Bashir Jones, who was a former Cleveland City Councilman. He is a Black Muslim, and he's one of those all about what you going to do for my community. Mm-hmm. He became the first person as a Democrat. He's a Democrat. He decided to endorse Lee. Mm-hmm. Within a week, probably about 4 days after that endorsement was public and became well known across the city and the county, magically, a report ends up in the paper that, oh, there's an FBI subpoena with looking into stuff about him. Now, mind you, 4 months later, there's been no indictment. No, I talked to Bashir not too long ago. He's like, my lawyer hasn't heard anything.
Wow.
Still. And so then it's like, well, who? My first question, as being somebody in the media, who leaked it?
Right.
And so it had to come when I started doing the process of elimination. It had to come from City Hall, which is controlled by a Black Democrat mayor who was supporting the white Democrat candidate. So that was my first introduction to, oh, this is different.
Yeah.
So there were things like that continued to happen. There was a debate that was scheduled that was supposed to be hosted by some of the Black fraternities here. Mm-hmm. That magically got moved until after early voting had already started. Mm-hmm. There was several incidents where basically the Democrat would pull out of any debate that had him going up against the Republican in an audience that was predominantly Black. Mm-hmm. Including talking to some teenagers, by the way. He bailed on the teenagers. So it was all kinds of tricks and shenanigans. There was a Black organization that was getting ready to endorse the Republican, who then changed their vote because of pressure from the Democrats. And then the thing that really kind of hit me the most, and I shared this with you, was something that I witnessed in a meeting that I wasn't supposed to be in.
Okay. Yep.
So I'm looking at this, and it's a bunch of Black pastors. It's a bunch of Black pastors, and they have elected officials that are here. And it's basically just a full-on propaganda session, to the point where they were actually telling pastors, this is what you need to be saying to your congregations. That's a direct quote, right? Mm-hmm. And so somebody who I know pointed out to me and said, are you seeing something? Because he sees me like getting ready to lose my mind.
Right.
And especially when one of the elected officials lied and told this whole room that the Civil Rights and Voting Rights Act passed without a single Republican vote. And that's a bold-faced lie. If you know anything about that, you know it's a damn lie, right? So right. I'm getting ready to lose my mind. And the person points this out to me. He says, are you noticing something? I said, yeah, I'm noticing a lot, right? And he says, look around the room. You are who they used to be. He said, when they started in their 20s, most of them start, because these folks are probably about in their 60s and 70s around the room, right? He said, most of them, when they started, they were in their 20s. And they wanted to help. They wanted to make a difference. He said, but people stopped tithing. You know, their church attendance went down. The community changed. So they started getting money for their programs and to keep their doors open from the government, from elected officials. And as a result, they lost their teeth. All this time, a lot of times we would think, man, how do they not see this?
Yeah. That's what I was wondering when you were telling me about it. Yeah. I'm like, why are they going?
But what
are they
I going learned, with
this? Yeah.
Was, and when you have conversations off the record, what you learn is some of them do see it, but they're powerless to do anything about it.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
These days, it seems like everybody's talking, but no one is actually listening to the things they're saying. Critical thinking isn't dead, but it's definitely low on oxygen. Join me, Kira Davis, on Just Listen to Yourself every week as we reason through issues big and small, critique our own ideas, and learn to draw our talking points all the way out to their logical conclusions. Subscribe to Just Listen to Yourself with Kira Davis, an FCB Radio podcast on Apple, on Spotify, iHeart, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So can you tell us a little bit more about how this Democratic machine manages to shut out the Republicans who actually are trying? Because I know there are some, Lee Weingarten, and probably some others. But even what you've already described is how they manage to kind of shut these people out. What are some other ways that they kind of solidify their hold here?
So they stop you from having any opportunity to get your messaging out, right? Any door that's open that gives you access to the average person, they shut it down. Because really, especially when you have a campaign like ours, where we were telling factual information, things that this person allowed to happen to Black people, what they did was just... They couldn't refute it. They couldn't say it wasn't true. They couldn't say it was a lie. They just made sure nobody heard it. So we had to go above and beyond to make sure that people heard it, whether it was going on television, social media. You guys were a big help. You know what I mean? My FCB family. We had to go above and beyond to get around the roadblocks that they continued to set between us and the average person. Because that's really what it's about. It's about the average person. And I learned that on election day as I'm going around different polling locations, dealing with kind of our folks that we had in these different polling locations. And I'm seeing people who are coming into the polling locations either with a Democratic sample ballot in their hand already, mm-hmm. which has been mailed to them, or there were people who were literally standing in front of the polling locations with signs around their neck saying, get your Democratic sample ballot.
Wow.
So what ended up happening...
Is that illegal?
After looking at the results, right, there were judges, for example, who had no opposition and still got like over 200,000 votes. I'm like, that's a sample ballot.
Isn't it illegal to do that, though?
Not here.
Oh.
Not here. You can't go close to the door of the voting, of where you go in for the voting booth. But you can stand outside. You stand outside, and they handle sample ballots all day. I'll give you another story that really disturbed me. It was a friend of mine who was working at a poll, and they were working, you know, with the Board of Elections, so they couldn't do any of this stuff, right? Like, you have to be non-political. They told me a person walked up to them and was like, because in our county, the judicial races don't have Republican or Democrat listed next to the candidates.
Okay. And so it's like a nonpartisan race.
Correct. So this person walked up to the my friend and was like, my mother told me I got to vote all Democrat, but I don't know which judge is Republican or Democrat. Can you help me? Of course they couldn't. But the fact of the matter is like, wait a minute, you don't even know the candidates?
Mm-hmm. Now I was,
and so,
yeah, and that's actually a problem nationwide, but go ahead.
Yeah, but when you have that Democratic sample ballot, which is one of the reasons why candidates pay money to make sure they get endorsed to get on that sample ballot. Oop, did I say that out loud? learned that too.
Jeez.
That's why that happens, because if you're in a Democratic county and your name ends up on that sample ballot, 9 times out of 10, you're going to win, because people just get the sample ballot and just vote all the way down. Another thing that I learned, and some of the people listening may have known this already. I didn't. We, you know, had suspicions. Did you know that candidates pay for souls to the polls?
No, I didn't actually. I mean, I'm not surprised, but I'm not surprised. Like, cause I mean, you just said they pay to get on the ballot, and that happens in a lot of places. So candidates do pay a lot of money to buy themselves an advantage. But I didn't know about the souls of bulls.
Yeah. They pay the churches.
Oh, no, it's not a payment. It's a tithe.
Right. Coming to the storehouse. So it's a machine. We always hear people say the Democratic machine. It's a literal machine. They bully people. They twist on, and we're talking about the way they're treating other Democrats. We're not talking about how they treat Republicans. These are other Democrats that they're treating like this. You know what I'm saying? And I'm sure it's similar in other places, which is why I wanted to to bring this to light, because the stuff that I saw, I was just like, wow, this is insane. It's like an assembly line. They have an assembly line to produce votes.
You know, and especially with the intimidation factor. I mean, you told me about this even before you started working on this campaign, about how you and people that you've known, Colin, you know, people were trying to intimidate you guys to not support the people you were reporting. And I think you told me that there was somebody who told you that you were going too hard against Ronayne.
That's correct.
Can you tell us about
that's
that?
That's correct. Yeah, so... You know, we every black person who supported Lee Weingart got some sort of warning or threat from somebody where, you know, you hitting them too hard, you pushing too far, you know, all that kind of stuff. Because here's the other thing, and this kind of goes back to the point that you're always making, and the point that, you know, I agree with as well. Democrats in these areas are not used to competition.
Right.
So as a result, when you have a Republican who comes in and actually brings legitimate competition, a lot of times they don't know what to do.
Okay.
So that's why it becomes a threat. It becomes a threat to the power structure. Forget Republican, Democrat. It becomes a threat to the power structure. It becomes a threat to the ruling class.
Yes.
And so even people who agree with you are like, I can't touch y'all.
So, and here's a question that I want to ask before we, you know, open it up to questions. How do Republicans get by that? I mean, if Republicans do start to try to make more inroads in communities like yours and others, I mean, you've got Democratic operatives, black people, who might be more open to supporting a Republican, but they still got to eat at the end of the day. They still need a job after the election. You've got the role of the black pastors who are depending on government funding at this point because they're not getting enough in tithes. how can Republicans get past all these issues, the intimidation and the entrenchment of the Democratic machine in these communities? Because I always say, you know, if Republicans want to make inroads, they got to show up in person. Well, yeah, that's the first step. But they also need to understand the obstacles that they're facing. So what ways can Republicans start to get past some of those obstacles if and when they do start trying to compete?
So I think a big part of what they can do in a lot of these places, in the blue states, it's a lot harder because you have the blue cities and the blue states, right? So you have a gigantic machine and it's a lot harder. But in places where you have blue cities and red states, Republicans in those states who have power outside of those areas have to do more so that people who do this politically for a living have an alternative.
Right.
Because really one of the biggest ways that they enforce the power of the machine is to threaten to cut you off if you don't obey.
Right.
And Republicans don't do a good enough job of hiring Black people to work in their staff. So if you hire more Black people to work in your staff, now those folks who are under threat and under siege in those blue cities, those blue counties, in those red states, have an opportunity to go elsewhere. These people can vote their conscience without worrying about someone threatening to take their livelihood away. That's number one.
Okay.
And that's really mainly for like the blue cities that are in like Ohio or like Texas or like, you know what I mean? In those blue cities and those red states, you really want to take that barrier away. You need to start hiring more Black people so that, okay, well, if you fire me here, I can just go work for the governor or I can go work for the auditor or whoever, right?
And take away that monopoly.
Correct. Because what we see a lot of is that the people in power, you know this, our community is very top down in a lot of ways. So the Black folks in power are the ones who are afraid the most because they have the smallest grip on power. Because the Democratic Party, the dirty little secret is the Democratic Party is not ultimately controlled by Black people.
Right.
The Democratic Party is controlled by white liberals.
Right.
So when you're in a party that's controlled by white liberals, you get your power by your proximity to them. So there's a lot of Black folks who we tend to try to put all Democrats in the same box. But there's a lot of Black Democrats who are still Black first.
Mm.
But they're put in this position where they're stuck because they get power by being in close proximity to white liberals. So as a result, they like, yo, if I go with you, I could lose everything. Mm-hmm. And so they have no covering. You know, it's the same. I mean, it's the same way like with conscious Black Republicans. When you're a conscious Black Republican and Republicans don't back you when you get hit, you have no covering. So Republicans have to do a better job of making sure that Black people have enough covering to do what they want to do. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's really a huge, huge, huge part of the problem. Because if the Black people in power feel threatened by you, you don't get access to the masses because they're the ones that control the access.
Right, the gatekeepers.
Correct. So if you don't get access to the masses, you're not going to be competitive in that vote. So there are some things that Republicans can do. But step one is for these red states that have these blue cities in them, you need to hire more Black people.
Okay, that makes sense. What are some other, I mean, that sounds like that'd be like one of the main things that they need to do, but what are some other things that state parties should be doing?
So, this is a hard one to say, because sometimes you're not going to see the results right away. But you have to compete in these areas and you have to compete on a regular basis. And sometimes you have to spend a lot of money to lose.
Uh-huh.
The reason why I say that is because part of the other problem that we saw is because Republicans are so non-competitive in our areas for so long that when a Republican does show up to try to compete, everybody's afraid to support them. Mm. Because they don't believe you can win. And if you lose, they get locked out. Especially in these areas, a lot of people don't see that there's an internal battle going on in the Democratic Party as well.
Right.
Between what we would consider to be traditional Democrats, who are largely black, and the progressives, who are largely white. and they're black enablers who understand that they get power by being in proximity
to right.
So there are black folks who like, I can't trust you because I can't touch you because I don't trust you gonna win. And if I go with you and you lose, I'm done. We had somebody who said specifically who did not like the Democratic candidate at all. Knew he was bad for black people. But he told us, if I support you, my career is over. Mm.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, that seems to be one of the main issues. So I'm going to open it up for a little bit to questions. We got to keep it short, though, because like I said, I have about 24 minutes left because I'm going to be going on Tez and Figaro Spaces. But if you have a question or a comment, then come grab a mic. Okay, got one right here. Lucas Scott Roberts. Let's bring you on here. Okay, go ahead and unmute your mic, brother.
Hey, thanks, Jeff. Hey, I just wanted to ask if have you ever been approached, like, in a good faith effort by a Republican to, like, hey, how can I try and garner votes out here?
Yeah, in this campaign that I was a part of. I mean, you know, they put up real effort. I mean, it's Lee's campaign spent $1.2 million in this county. Like, so it wasn't like it was an also ran, wasn't like it was just a let me put my name on the ballot. No, they spent real money. And out of that 1.2, it was a considerable amount that was spent going after the black community. So it was a full effort. But the problem is because we don't that's so rare that when you do it, the first guy who does it is basically like taking a pile of money, putting it in the floor and setting it on fire. Because everybody's afraid to support you.
You know what I'm saying?
Wow. Because the party is usually not there. So here you have a guy who was sincere. I mean, he did all kinds of stuff. He raised millions of dollars as a private citizen and put it in black communities, replacing roofs on community centers, doing all kinds of stuff.
This is Darvio Kingpin Marl, co-host of the Outlaws Radio Show. And if you haven't heard our show before, check out this clip.
One of the things I think we have to do on the Republican side, because we've got the white working class, and I think we've got them solid, is start to attract, you know, the black and I guess now the Latino working class into our coalition. Because I think if we do that and we serve those voters well, I mean, we could become the majority party in this country for a generation if we actually see the opportunity. And we're going to be a stronger party if we accept that the country club set maybe is never coming back, but we acquire some of those black and Hispanic working class voters into our coalition. Like, let the country club set go, you know, let them use their preferred pronouns and obsess about racial issues and gender issues, because they're all crazy. And I think that this is something that actually unites a lot of working class white and black folks, is we just want to live in a country where we don't have to obsessively worry about everything that we say.
Subscribe to the Outlaws Radio Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts. That's OUTLAWS, the Outlaws Radio Show, an FCB radio podcast.
Do you know if Lee or part of his team reached out to the Ohio Republican Party?
Oh, yeah. The Ohio Republican Party participated.
Okay.
They did try to help. Because Lee, you know, is personal friends with a lot of them. So it wasn't like, usual, where the state party usually doesn't give a damn about this race. They actually cared this time. And then this becomes the problem, too. So a lot of times when we have these conversations, it's Republicans need to show up versus, well, Black people need to vote for Republicans, right? And yeah. One of the things that I saw is the answer is a little bit of both, right? Republicans do need to show up. If they were showing up on a regular basis, trying to win a race like this wouldn't be so hard. Because you'd know people on the ground. You'd know people in the community that work for Republicans. You'd know that these folks can't starve you if you do, if you don't do what they want you to do. You'd be able to combat things like the sample ballot, right? You'd be able to do like all of those sorts of things that they use in the machine to hold their power. If Republicans competed in Black communities on a consistent basis, you'd be able to fight a lot of that. But they don't. So that's a problem. The other problem is when you have a Republican that does compete and still gets a poor showing, that does two things that people aren't even realizing. There were a lot of Democrats, a lot of Black Democrats, who wanted us to win. And the reason why they wanted us to win is because Lee winning increases their leverage in their party. Because they get to go to their party and say, y'all effing up. It also creates leverage for the Black Republicans who are connected to the community, because the Black Republicans get to go to the Republican Party and demand that you continue a sustained effort to reach Black people. But when that doesn't happen, the Black Democrats lose all leverage, and the Black Republicans have to deal with the white Republicans, some of them, I'm not saying all, but there are some white Republicans in every party like this across the country who are like, see, y'all shouldn't have spent all that money trying to get those Black people in here.
Right. Right.
So I guess my next question would be, what's the best, like, what one thing, the best thing that a Republican can do to win the gatekeepers that you were talking about? What's the best thing that they could do to try to win them over?
The best thing that they can do to try to win them over is, like I said, if you got blue cities and red states, the best thing that they can do to try to win them over is make sure that those state Republicans or those congressmen in areas, in red areas, make sure they hire Black people. That's the best thing. That's the best thing that you can do, because a lot of folks are afraid of losing jobs. A lot of folks are afraid of not being able to feed their families. A lot of times Republicans go in these communities, you know, just I'm asking for your vote, but not realizing what you're asking people to sacrifice in order to support you. So if you can give them a little cover, a little landing spot, because there is going to be backlash, sure, there is going to be retribution, especially if that Republican doesn't win, which in the first couple of cycles, they probably won't, right? So there is going to be backlash. But if those, if Republicans in the areas of that state where they actually do win, if they can give Black, those Black leaders cover, that's how you can kind of start to like rip the veil down a little bit.
What about the issue with the pastors that you were talking about earlier? I mean, with them not receiving as many tithes and getting government funding, how can Republicans deal with that? I mean, because, you know, even when I talked to Mike Huckabee and he ran, a lot of what he did as his outreach was to speak at Black churches and speak with Black pastors. And I don't know if the same issue was present back then in Arkansas, but it's an issue here in your community in Ohio. What can Republicans do about that issue?
So, and this is going to involve Republicans actually being on the ground in the communities to understand how to do this. For some of these Black pastors, and I'm just going to be honest, some people may be offended by this, but I'm going to just be honest. With some of these Black pastors, they're too entrenched, they're too compromised, and there really isn't anything you can do about that. So what Republicans need to do is start reaching out to the Black pastors who are not compromised to the black pastors who are not in those rooms. That's another thing. And I'm glad you brought that up, because another thing that I saw, the Democrats are extremely organized and the Republicans are extremely disorganized. You know, the Democrats have ward leaders. They have, like, it's an assembly line.
Right.
And Republicans are so disorganized, you don't even organize the people that you already have. I asked a black Republican who lives in an inner city neighborhood, I say, hey, what's the closest Republican club to where you live? I don't know. This is an active person. This is an active person who's active in politics. And then I look up, all right, ain't no Republican club close to you. That's part of the problems. Because if you look at locally in most of these cities, definitely in Cleveland, they got all kinds of groups for Democrats. That's how they organize. That's how they communicate. That's how they build relationships and bonds with each other. So it goes beyond politics. They don't just interact when it comes to politics. They're friends with each other. They go to the same churches. They belong to the same fraternities or sororities, all this kind of stuff. And Republicans are totally disorganized. So a lot of times Republicans think that they can just go in the community and woo the gatekeepers and that's good enough. But again, they don't have no covering, so they can't really mess with you. And some of them are too compromised to even mess with you, even if they wanted to. So specifically going back to the pastor's part, Republicans have to build real relationships with pastors who are outside of that system. And there are plenty of them.
Yeah, and I would also imagine that, you know, if they do get elected, they have to give some assurances that that funding isn't going to go away, at least not right away.
Correct. At the end of the day, Republicans have a policy for that. You know, nobody talks about it anymore, but, you know, the faith-based and community initiatives that George W. Bush did was like, hey, you know, some of this money that we spend on social programs, why don't we just give it to you? And you do it. You know, we can have, like, you know, parameters and all that sort of thing, but if we can support you, you in the community anyway, you can do it better than we can. We'll just write the check.
Right.
So that was a policy that I always supported, because my mother comes from the nonprofit sector. So I saw firsthand, you know, the kind of struggles that they face. You know what I'm saying? And my mother was one of those people who refused to be bought off. Because that's what ends up happening. A lot of these nonprofits, a lot of these organizations, these NGOs, they have funding issues and they get bought off. So a lot of times, so Republicans can come into the community and be like, hey, we want y'all to vote for us, but we're not going to hire you. We're not going to make sure you get any resources.
Right.
And when you get attacked by the Democrats, we're not going to back you up. It don't work that way. You got to do something.
So other than Lee, have you seen other Republicans trying to get elected? Or, I mean, is he like the first one who really made a concerted effort? Or what does that look like?
So this year there were several. We had a judge by the name of Wanda Jones. She was like the first black Republican in the county as a county judge for like years. She was very involved in the community and had a lot of support. There was another guy by the name of Tim Hess, white Irish guy with a black wife. he was a civil rights attorney before he decided to run for judge. Had a lot of support as well. So, you know, there are some that are trying, but the problem is they all lost. Right. So now what happens, and you know how the GOP is, you know, Republicans, the Republican Party, I'll put it like this, not the activists, because some of the activists get it. But the Republican establishment is not very long term strategic in their thinking.
Right.
And so that's the fear, that when you have a bunch of candidates who pop up, who really understand the community, really understand the issues and really understand the importance of going to the community and they lose, the fear is that Republicans then turn off the spigot and like, we ain't giving y'all no money.
So it's like, basically, there has to be, and I've been saying this too, that there has to be a mindset change in the GOP, because you're right, they do take a very short-term approach, which is why a lot of them have been afraid to really start investing, because they know that they're not going to win a whole lot, you know, at first.
No, and on the flip side, in fairness too, and I totally agree with you on that, but in fairness, you know, our voters also have to just stop voting up and down with the sample ballot.
Right.
Because when you do that, you make it harder for us to advocate on your behalf. I've been in those rooms. I fight with these folks all the time. Some of the stuff that Lee did, not everybody was in favor of him doing. And a lot of it was him deciding himself, no, I'm going to do this because it's the right thing to do.
Right.
So when you lose, it makes our argument harder to make. So it's kind of both. Republicans have to make a sustained effort, because if you don't, that's why you're in this predicament in the first place. But the voters do kind of have to meet you halfway. And part of the issue that we had is when we're talking an empowerment agenda, and we're talking about all of these like really, 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 really pro-black issues, a Democrat operative who was supportive of Lee warned me probably like a couple weeks before the election. And they were like, you better make sure these people show up and vote, because the black people who are most favorable to the message that we were presenting are the ones who are typically the least likely to vote.
Wow, okay.
And on election day, that's exactly what happened. The turnout, particularly in the city of Cleveland, the turnout was abysmal in the areas where black people live. So Cleveland historically has been one of the most segregated big cities in America. So the east side is predominantly black and the west side is predominantly white. The east side turnout is abysmal. It was like 22% or something like that.
Oh, wow.
It was abysmal. And as a result, a Republican candidate will get blown out in the city because the west side is now full of woke white people.
Yeah.
So, and the black folks who did show up are the ones who just vote the sample ballot. And the other issue that we had was when we were warned this by Democrats, the problem is Republicans don't know how to have a turnout operation to get black voters to vote.
Yeah, there's no Republican version of Souls of the Polls.
Right. 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 So then that becomes the issue when it's like, okay, you know it's a problem, but they don't know what to do about it. So it's just all kinds of stuff, man. All kinds of stuff.
Okay. I mean, so this is kind of just like an introduction to what's been going on. And I do want to have more conversations about this issue, because like we always say, a lot of people ignore local politics, but that's the politics that impacts your life the most. So I think we need to have more conversations about this. I think that we need to continue these, because it's not going to change if we're not putting pressure on our leaders to do the right thing. I mean, I'm glad to hear that Ohio's GOP was willing to get involved, but we need more of that, and it needs to be a sustained effort. So I think we're going to go ahead and close it out there. But before we close out, Darvio, why don't you kind of just give us some closing words of what you want people to know?
Yeah, so I guess, you know, the thing that was just kind of disappointing to me, because for me, and you know this, Jeff, and we kind of share this, like my goal is not, I want every black person to be a Republican, right? My goal is that we are free enough to vote our conscience without having to make these other considerations that other voters typically don't have to make, right? The average voter typically doesn't have to make the observation of I'm going to lose my political job if I support X person, or, you know what I'm saying? I want black liberals to feel free to vote for liberals. I want black moderates and conservatives to feel free to vote for the people who share their interests. And the unfortunate thing is that there's a long way to go for that. And the really sad thing to me was to see how many black Democrats who understand the problem but are powerless to do anything about it. And I don't blame them, because if the Republicans are, like I told you, Republican hasn't been in leadership here in 25 years. We haven't, I was 2 years old when Cleveland's last Republican mayor left. Right? So you can't blame them. You can't blame them from like, yeah, I agree with you, but I can't really mess with you because y'all don't normally show up. And when you do show up, you don't win.
Yeah. I mean, that consistency needs to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, and then to see kind of like how this machine operates from the media, from the institutions. A lot of our institutions, a lot of our black institutions are compromised. I'm sure most of the people listening to this know that. But they are compromised because, again, they get money from the same sources.
Yep.
It's the same issue with the churches. They're getting money from the same sources. So as a result, when Republicans forget, we're trying to win elections for a second. When you're not in the community at all, you're not the ones writing the checks for those food banks. You're not the ones writing the checks to that homeless shelter. You're not the ones funding these community resources on a consistent basis. Now, Lee did that, but again, he's the first one,
yeah.
Right? Right. So, but you're not doing it on a consistent basis, so you're not building relationships with people. And people don't know that, well, if the Democrats cut me off, I'll be okay. So that's a huge, huge problem. And that goes back to not being around.
Gotcha. So we'll go ahead and leave it there. But before we head out, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you, your podcasts, all that good stuff.
Follow me at D the Kingpin everywhere. That's DTHEKINGPIN. Make sure you subscribe to the Outlaws Radio Show. That's OUTLAWS on Apple, Spotify, iHeart, or wherever you get your podcast.
Awesome. Well, thanks a lot, and we'll be doing this again soon.
Appreciate it, brother.
All right. Peace.
All right, everybody, thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in to A Fresh Perspective with Jeff Charles. I hope you liked that conversation between Darvio and I. It was very eye-opening for me, and we even had phone conversations before we did the spaces where he kind of laid out a lot of this stuff. And, you know, it's if for anybody who wants to depose the Democrats in these areas, they've got an uphill battle. Now, I'm not saying that it can't be done, because it can, but it's important to know exactly what you're going to be dealing with. So I appreciated having that spaces session with him. And if you like this podcast, please do me a favor, like this and share this with your friends, share it on your social media, leave me a 5-star rating, especially if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, and also leave me a review, just a few sentences for people to let people know why you love this podcast so much. But until next time, God bless and good night, or morning, or afternoon, or whatever your time you're listening to this.
This has been a presentation of the FCB Podcast Network, where real talk lives. Visit us online at fcbpodcasts.com.